Our newscast made possible by Carbonite, providing automatic cloud backup for small business computers and servers. Details at carbonite.com.
The Kravis Center presents The Moody Blues, Timeless Flight, The Voyage Continues, March 31st at 8 p.m. The legendary Moody Blues, whose inspiring albums have lit up the hearts and minds of millions of rock fans. March 31st at the Kravis Center. Tickets and information available online at kravis.org or by calling 561-832-SHOW or from Ticketmaster.
Support for the Florida Roundup provided by the law firm of Stearns Weaver Miller Weisler Aledeff and Citizen PA with offices throughout Florida. Proud to be WLRN's longest continuous corporate underwriter.
Welcome to the Florida Roundup here on WLRN. I'm Tom Hudson. Thanks for listening. How would you like this deal? Fix up your house, give up ownership, but still live there and get a break on your property taxes. Miami Dolphins and Sun Life Stadium owner Stephen Ross is essentially asking for that basic deal for the stadium. This week, Ross offered to pay for the renovations himself, up to $400 million, but he wants to eliminate his property tax bill. It was a year ago that Ross failed to get Florida state lawmakers to support raising the hotel tax in Miami-Dade County to pay for stadium upgrades.
We made a pledge that we would
get that Super Bowl, get that Super Bowl.
Money, money, come on.
That was the refrain that this community heard a year ago from Dolphins CEO Mike D, making the case for the Sun Life Stadium renovations. WLRN back then challenged our audience to remix the news with D's comments. Now, D has since left the Dolphins, but the Dolphins have not given up on upgrading the stadium. How could this impact funding for public schools in the city of Miami Gardens? Is it a good deal for South Florida to better compete for Super Bowls and big events? Is it a good investment? Let us know your thoughts on Twitter at WLRN. Use the hashtag Florida Roundup. Doug Hanks with the Miami Herald joins us now via Skype. Doug, always great to speak with you. Given all the money here that has been changing hands, which government agencies are getting the side of the deal right now for Sun Life and the private ownership and the property tax payments that Stephen Ross has to make?
Well, Miami-Dade County gets about half of it. The school board gets about $1 million, and Miami Gardens gets $1 million. Now, I heard your introduction. I would make an addition.
Please do.
Picture that. You get the, you know, the government takes over your house. But also in that context, both your neighbors live in free government housing and get money from the government to pay for their groceries. And that's what Steve Ross is saying.
That's the argument. And your neighbors here are the Marlins in the Heat. And your neighbors are the Marlins in the Heat. And that's his argument, is we want what everybody else already has in Miami-Dade County, especially when it comes to private professional sports teams and public stadiums.
Exactly. And the kids always drive by one of your houses and throws eggs, and that's the Marlins, because people are so ticked off about that deal that it's still impacting the other sports deals. But by the way, I mean, can we keep going on this?
Yeah.
There's a really popular, good-looking person looking to buy real estate in the neighborhood. Everyone seems to love him, and they're pretty excited to have him move into town. That's David Beckham, and he wants his own government-owned stadium.
But in all these cases here, Doug, be the parent. Just because all the other kids are doing it doesn't mean that it is appropriate and correct for you.
Well, it may or may not. I mean, listen, Steve Ross owns a National Football League team. NFL has a monopoly on this asset, and he's saying this is essentially what Miami needs to have sort of a top-notch NFL team. He said, I'm okay with it, but don't think that the Dolphins can continue forever in this stadium. And not all, but most teams do get government help when it comes to stadium work.
And he's also making the argument that in order to make up for the lost property tax, this renovation that he's willing to pay for out of his own pocket would attract a Super Bowl, would attract big events back to Sun Life Stadium. But here's the question, right, Doug? Would that attraction, if it does come to fruition, make up for the lost $1 million to Miami Public Schools, the lost $1 million to Miami Gardens, and the lost money in Miami-Dade County?
Well, I don't see how it would mathematically, because you're talking about property tax revenue versus sales tax and hotel tax revenue. But I think that the argument is, listen, this stadium and the events it attracts are good for the overall economy. is this not a good return on investment? I'm just looking to get sort of the same arrangement the other teams have. And I will now pay for this renovation that for sure will bring Super Bowls back to Miami, because don't forget, the NFL, which is, you know, the Dolphins are a franchise of the NFL, controls where Super Bowls go. So that's a very true statement that without this renovation, the area will not get Super Bowls.
Because the league has essentially mandated that the stadium be upgraded if Miami is to compete with other stadiums for future Super Bowls. But again, it begs the question, all right, if this deal goes through, if everybody approves of it, the lost property tax funding for the public entities, it's not a dollar-for-dollar makeup from hotel bed taxes.
Well, I don't know. There's a lot of math going on there. One thing to keep in mind is, and this I think it's really getting down to it when you look at the sort of the deal that Mayor Jimenez proposed, was the county will eat the loss of sort of our side of the property tax ledger, which let's say it's between $1 million and $2 million. But Steve Ross, you have to work out a deal with the school board and with the city of Miami Gardens, where Sun Life is the top taxpayer. Now, when the Beacon Council, when Miami-Dade County, when Rick Scott tries to get businesses to come to town, they often will abate the county portion of the county of the property tax, but not the school board and the municipality.
Still trying to work out those details. Doug Hanks covering it all for the Miami Herald, helping us out here on the Florida Roundup. Thank you, Doug. Still to come on the program, Florida lawmakers consider reforms to better protect vulnerable kids.
You are listening to the Florida Roundup on 91.3. This is Mia Lorenzo, joined by Lorenzo Ponce de Leon, and we are just pausing for the cause, and we're looking for a few good fans of the Florida Roundup and Tom Hudson. You can become a member of WLRN and support the programming here at 866-247-9576 or go online to WLRNradio.org. How many fans are we looking for there?
We're looking for 40 for this hour. And again, I'll stress this, we need 600 for the day to be on our daily goal. And if we do reach that, we can suspend our on-air fundraising for the day. And that is key. We do, I'm sure you guys want to hear the full program here without interruption. But regardless, now we are in our spring fund drive. And you've been thinking about becoming a member of WLRN. If you added up all the time you spend listening to WLRN on the way to work with, again, this is aside from fundraising, and you're on your way home each day with an hour or two each week, and you're listening to more than 700 hours each year. That's a lot of time. Let's break it down for you. 350 movies, more than 200 football games, or a couple of hundred concerts. And all we're asking for is $5 or $10 a month. That makes WLRN one of the best bargains in public radio.
That's right. Ever have one of those days when you did something small, but it turned out to be a positive ripple effect throughout the day? Mm-hmm. Well, if you'd like to have that experience again, donate to this public radio station in the next few minutes. And the sooner you do, the longer you can enjoy that ripple effect and the sooner we can end the drive for the day. We're sitting there talking about the Dolphin Stadium. We have these little hourly goals. And when we do, it's like, you know, for every, you have to, what, get 10 yards to get a first down? Okay, so you can get that touchdown by getting 10 yards, 10 yards, 10 yards. Well, that's what we need. We need 40 fans for this particular hour to reach our overall goal. And I know you can do that. Call 866-247-9576 or online at WLRNradio.org.
Yeah, join the WLRN team and help us get our touchdown for today. Now, don't be confused by the concept of membership. Members are simply our frontline supporters. Listeners who choose to contribute financially, monthly, or on an annual basis to support our work. Members are pretty much like you, but they're different than you in one respect. They care enough about public radio to volunteer a few bucks a month to ensure that it stays healthy. Want to join them? Here's how. Call 866-247-9576, or you can go online safely and securely at WLRNradio.org.
Donate to WLRN now and you're automatically entered to win our grand prize, a $2,500 Apple gift card. You can upgrade to the new MacBook Air, the powerful MacBook Pro, a new iPad with Retina display, even a new iPhone for pretty much everyone in the family. Win, and you'll have $2,500 to spend at any Apple store or at apple.com. No donation required. Rules posted at WLRNradio.org. Call 866-247-9576 or click and join online at WLRNradio.org.
Think about that for a minute. What would you do with a $2,500 Apple gift card? I think that could go quite a long way, definitely. Yeah. So get in on that, 866-247-9576 or online at WLRNradio.org. But there is something else. You can also get in for a drawing for two round-trip tickets on American Airlines to Chicago to see a live taping of that Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me. What an awesome trip. So we're giving you so many reasons to call that number. What's the number, Lorenzo?
It is 866-247-9576, 866-247-9576, or online at WLRNradio.org. Thanks.
The Israel Philharmonic Orchestra with music director Zubin Mehta come to the Arsh Center on Sunday, March 23rd. The New York Times says Mr. Mehta and the Israel Philharmonic make up a significant and valuable alliance. This very special concert will feature the monumental Symphony No. 8 by Anton Bruckner, known as the Apocalyptic. The Israel Philharmonic Orchestra with Maestro Zubin Mehta, Sunday, March 23rd. Information at arshcenter.org. The Key West Waterfront Playhouse presents the Broadway smash hit Xanadu, a musical parody about a beautiful muse who comes to Earth to help a young street artist achieve his artistic dream to open a roller disco. Nominated for 4 Tony Awards by award-winning playwright Douglas Carter Beam with a score by the pop group ELO, the New York Times called Xanadu heaven on wheels, outlandishly enjoyable. Tickets at waterfrontplayhouse.org or 305-294-5015. Brought to you in part by the Monroe County Tourist Development Council.
This is the Florida Roundup on WLRN. I'm Tom Hudson. Thanks again for listening. Dozens of Florida children are dead, kids known to the agency responsible for protecting them, the Florida Department of Children and Families. The deaths last year led to a series of hearings and recommendations. Again, this week, Florida lawmakers took up a package of bills designed to reform the agency. On Tuesday in Tallahassee at a Senate committee, president of advocacy group Florida's Children First, Howard Tallenfeld, told lawmakers gaps remain in the child investigation process.
The problem is that after 60 days, the future risk, if there's no follow-up, can't be addressed under current law by the investigator. And so that's the hall right now.
Chairperson of the Senate Children, Families, and Elder Affairs Committee is Eleanor Sobel, a Democrat from Hollywood.
We've identified several problems in our committee's works, and our bills contain recommended solutions.
What are those solutions? Should child abuse investigators be required to have higher educational credentials? Should siblings be housed together in foster care? Let us know your thoughts, your experiences on Twitter at WLRN. Or via email, thefloridaroundup@wlrnnews.org. Margie Manziel is with News Service of Florida from Tallahassee. Sergio Bustos with the Miami Herald joining us here. Both of you, welcome to the Florida Roundup. Margie, what are the proposals that are on the table for legislators to consider to reform the Department of Children and Families?
They have so many. The Senate has 3 bills. The House decided to go with just one, but there's a dozen different topics, everything from having an assistant secretary for child welfare, only that at the Department of Children and Families, to professionalizing the child protective investigators, training and education requirements, trying to get more social workshops into the mix. The House and Senate bills differ there. Safety plans, keeping siblings together, tightening accountability for the community-based care organizations, requiring more comprehensive death reviews, publishing the facts of children's deaths on the website, and there's more.
Sergio, I know that the Miami Herald is going to be publishing a long investigative piece regarding the tragic stories of dozens of kids and the involvement with the Department of Children and Families. Do these recommendations have a chance to, first of all, become law? And what separates these recommendations out this legislative session from ones we've seen in the past?
Tom, I think, first of all, it really is more than 400 kids who are going to document over the weekend. It'll be in the Sunday paper and then online. But as for the momentum that's building, I think there is momentum building in the legislature to get something done. It's kind of began last year when the Herald published a story noting that there was at least 20-some children who had died in the hands of DCF that had gone unreported as well. As you mentioned, there was that big public hearing down here with the Eleanor Sobel. Mm-hmm. So I think there's a lot of momentum building, and if it's a year to get it done, I believe this is it.
And also, in addition to these legislative responses, Margie, we've seen Governor Scott try to propose, well, he has proposed an increase in the budget for the Department of Children and Families. So it seems like the stars may be aligned for reform. Is the agency ready for reform?
That is the question. And I've got to tell you, the fact of this coming Miami Herald investigation is hanging over the whole process. I've heard people behind the scenes say, you know, lawmakers are trying to get out ahead of this because they know a scathing report is coming. I was talking with someone yesterday who told me off the record, the thing with the problem with something like that is you don't know where it's going to splash. So everybody's worried about their piece of that bill and how it will be affected by the Herald series.
Sergio, respond to that backroom preemptive criticism almost of a package of investigative reports that the legislators haven't even seen yet.
They may not have seen, obviously, the story we're putting together at the weekend, but the broader issue of protecting Florida's children has been around for a long time.
Yeah.
And I think they're made well aware of it.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, the fact that 40 kids, I think, in 4 months that had involvement, or 4 to 6 months last year that had involvement with the Department of Children and Families, died in very tragic and presumably preventable ways, is not news in terms of it's not new. It was covered then. It led to the hearings. It led to the series of recommendations that have led to the legislative process. So, Sergio, again, how do you respond when lawmakers are saying this Herald investigation is hanging over our heads?
Well, you know, it's good that we're kind of rattling the cages, if you will, of the state legislature. But to Margie's point, I think, is very interesting, is how will things change? To change kind of the bureaucratic ship, it's going to require a cultural change in how we view at-risk kids. And I think it's probably high time that the legislature paid a lot of attention to it, because in years past, they just haven't. And to their credit, to the governor's credit, to the legislature's credit, there's already a lot, as Margie described, a lot of legislation moving this session. And again, as you said, the stars may be aligned, and maybe this is the time to really take advantage of it. It certainly seems as if the legislature is paying attention.
Sergio Bustos with the Miami Herald, Margie Menzel with News Service of Florida. I'm Tom Hudson. This is the Florida Roundup here on WLRN. Sure. Legislators in Tallahassee also took up a bill to help sexually exploited children, putting more responsibility on the same agency we've been talking about, the Department of Children and Families. The bill also is stirring up some controversy. It would test a strategy to put sex trafficking victims in a safe house for up to 10 months against their will. Representative Lori Berman was concerned about putting children in facilities against their will.
We know that part of the process for a lot of these children is that they do run away and they don't feel comfortable in secure facilities. So that is why I want to make sure that they're not feeling victimized again.
Representative Berman said she felt that previous measures to help these kids had failed, and she did vote in favor of the measure, which moves forward in Tallahassee. Margie, this sex trafficking legislation is part of an entire package of legislative efforts that are really going after children in Florida. The reforms for the Department of Children and Families, part of it, which we discussed, this is part of it as well. What's driving all of this?
Well, part of it is understanding the depth and breadth of human trafficking. We know that probably 40,000 American kids are traffic every year, and we know that Florida is the third largest activity state after New York and California. And we know that, as Attorney General Pam Bondi told the House Healthy Families Committee earlier this week, that the kids average about 12 to 14 years old who are being trafficked in this particular way. So given the overlap between the kids who are being forced into prostitution and the kids in our state foster care system, there is a big overlap, or in the DJJ, in the Department of Juvenile Justice system. The state decided that it needed to learn more about how to deal with these youngsters who need a vast array of services if they, you know, finally do get the opportunity to gain access to them.
Sergi also added into this large group of legislative efforts that are going after protecting Florida kids is an effort to tighten up the sexual predator laws as well. All of this happening in the background, obviously, of a gubernatorial election and a significant election year. Does that surprise you, as one who's followed Florida politics, that these children issues and these really substantive children's issues and protection issues are getting so much attention in an election cycle? Sergio, you still with us? Well, we dropped Sergio Bustos from the Miami Herald. Margie, how about the political background that this is happening, this kind of debate over protecting children in an election cycle?
It is fascinating because you'll hear people behind the scenes who are familiar with child protection issues say, you know, we always have had children who die of abuse and neglect. The numbers are really not that new. The fact that they're being more widely reported is new. And the fact that they're being more widely debated, a lot of it, I think, is that children's advocates on a whole array of issues are growing increasingly successful at explaining to lawmakers what the connection is between children's health, children's safety, early learning, and the future well-being, yeah, productivity, and success of Florida as a state.
Finally, on education, Margie, we do have to talk about undocumented immigrants and the push to allow for in-state tuition. Governor Scott certainly pushed forward this issue in a big way this week, didn't he?
Absolutely. And what's going to be really fascinating to see is Senate President Don Gates is not in favor of the proposal, and House Speaker Will Weatherford is. So now we got two sides of the triumvirate here who are aligning. And, you know, Gates hasn't said that he'll block it, but I kind of think he will use it as a bargaining chip to get something he wants from the House.
Yeah, and what
could be stricter child protection.
I see. I was going to add, exactly, what is that? I mean, this is one of the few areas where the Republican leaders in the House and the Senate in Tallahassee disagree and publicly disagree. And so, you know, at stake may be in-state tuition for immigrants in Florida, but the political back and forth has got to put a couple of chips on the table here.
Well, and I think part of it is that Gates and Weatherford are different generations. Gates is wrapping up his career in the legislature. He's got one more term. I'm sure he'll enjoy it as an elder statesman. He has a ball at what he loves what he's doing. Weatherford could be governor someday. He's going to have more of a relationship with the Hispanic community to do that.
He's going to run for governor someday.
I think everyone expects that.
Right. The outcome of that election still is yet to be determined at this point.
Yes, but if he's going to succeed, if he's going to succeed, he has to have more of a relationship with Hispanic voters.
Yeah.
He knows that.
Yeah. Margie Menzel with us from the News Service of Florida from Tallahassee. A muffled Skype connection, but thank you for your time here on the Florida Roundup. Sergio Bustos with us earlier from the Miami Herald as well, and we'll look forward to Innocence Lost, the significant investigative series on Sunday in the Miami Herald regarding the Department of Children and Families here in the state of Florida. This is the Florida Roundup. Plenty more to come, including controversy, diplomacy, and the Catholic Church in the Caribbean.
You're listening to the Florida Roundup here on 91.3 WLRN. I'm Lorenzo Ponce de Leon, joined by Mia Lorenzo. And in case you didn't know, it is our spring fund drive and we are making full headway, but we still need your support to pledge for the Florida Roundup. We need Florida Roundup fans. Where are you at? We need your support. How That's many right. people do we need left for this hour, Mia?
We are making headway. We need 34 Florida Roundup fans to contribute by the end of the hour. So you got about 30 minutes, but I'm not telling you to wait 30 minutes. I'm telling you to call now, 866-247-9576, or go online to WLRNradio.org. I'm sitting here listening to the Florida Roundup. And I mean, where else? You know, we're talking about the reform of the Department of Children and Families to protect children better from just a whole host of issues. But, you know, think about where else can you hear such an in-depth conversation and from all points of view? I mean, that's what public radio is all about, the passion to dig deep, to get that story, to bring it to you so you can kind of wrap your head around it. And so if you're in support of that, call 866-247-9576 or online
at WLRNradio.org. I think what describes WLRN best, and probably even the Florida Roundup, is intelligent conversations and informative conversations. That is what encompasses what you will get when you listen to our local programs, such as the Florida Roundup. Now, what makes a WLRN listener become a WLRN contributor? Well, one reason is a sense of social responsibility. Public radio is a shared community resource, and if you get some value from it, you should consider putting something back in. And you can do that by calling 866-247-9576 or by going online at WLRNradio.org.
If you had to put a price on the peace of mind knowing that every time you tune to WLRN, you'll learn something new, what's that peace of mind worth to you? It's good to know that public radio will be there for you when you need it. Now, we're asking you to be here for us with a modest contribution. Give whatever you can. It's really not a big decision here. Is it $5 a month? Is it $10 a month? That sustainer program is the best way to go if you want to contribute but not sure how much. The number to call, 866-247-9576, or you can always give securely online at WLRNradio.org.
Now, if you donate now, here's a little bit of incentive for you. You're automatically entered to win a $2,500 Apple gift card. That is our grand prize for this drive. But for today, if you have the opportunity to see Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, NPR's news quiz live in Chicago. This is for a drawing where you will get tickets, two tickets to go have a round-trip flight. You will have hotel accommodations, and you will participate in a live taping of Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me. You can get on this by going to WLRNradio.org. It's safe. It's easy to do. Or you can call 866-247-9576.
I'm Brian Naylor with a story that brings us back a half a century.
We shall not rest until that war is won.
That's President Lyndon Johnson declaring his war on poverty in 1964.
The richest nation on earth can afford to win it. We cannot afford to lose it.
At the time, one in five Americans was poor. Today, things are better, but tens of millions of Americans are still living at or below the poverty level. This year, NPR reporters are exploring the impact and extent of poverty in the U.S. and what can be done to reduce it. In addition to the war on poverty, Johnson had his sights set for improving educational opportunities in the U.S. In 1967, he signed the Public Broadcasting Act, which led to the creation of National Public Radio in 1970. Here's Johnson right before he signed the bill.
It announces to the world that our nation wants more than just material wealth. Our nation wants more than a chicken in every pot. We in America have an appetite for excellence, too. And while we work every day to produce new goods and to create new wealth, we want most of all to enrich man's spirit, and that is the purpose of this act.
The people who work to bring you the stories you hear every day on public radio are informed by that same appetite for excellence. They work hard to bring you rigorous reporting and stories that inform and delight. And they do it in the original spirit that made public broadcasting possible. Our founding charter enables us to partner with you to support this important work with a contribution to your station. So please think about that appetite for excellence, us as your partner, as you make or renew your pledge to public radio today. And thanks.
Are you hungry? What's your appetite like? You want more public radio? You want more Florida Roundup? Then call 866-247-9576, or you can give securely online at WLRNradio.org. We are looking for a few good fans. We have these hourly goals that help us reach our overall daily goal. If we get to it early enough, we will end the drive early today. We are looking for 31 more fans to get us to the top of the hour. Can you help us with it? Call 866-247-9576.
Now, NPR junkies may know this, but for all of the rest of our listeners, NPR has a network of reporters in Washington, D.C. and around the world. They're in bunkers, streets, alleys, jungles, and even deserts around the world, backed up by producers and engineers, to make sure that that story is fact-checked. That is very important. And not to mention, that also applies to WLRN Miami Herald News, with all of our reporters who go out into the streets of Miami and surrounding municipalities to go and cover all of the news that is important, and have all of these contributors come in and even participate in the Florida Roundup to help recap and give you all of that news that you need to be updated on. Now, we make sure to get those stories to you in a timely way, as I'm sure you already know. Our collaboration with NPR and with the Miami Herald allows us to bring you the world story by story. Listeners like you support this collaboration because you know how it has enriched our lives and want it to grow strong in a new age. So won't you help us out now by calling Mia? What is the number?
866-247-9576. You can always go online to WLRNradio.org. It's almost like when you contribute and you listen to the reporters from wherever they are, from whatever point of view, all the fact-checking, you're listening to your dollars at work.
Absolutely.
I mean, you can see your results or hear your results on the air and visualize it, I guess. 866-247-9576 is the number to call. Remember, you can get in on that Apple gift card for $1,500, $1,200. All right, sorry, I'm giving you a little bit more money. or get in on those two round-trip tickets to Chicago to view a live taping of Wait, Don't Tell Me. Actually, it's a $2,500 gift card. I'm ripping people off. Call 866-247-9576, or you can always give securely online at WLRNradio.org, and thank you.
The Boca Museum of Art is currently hosting two exhibitions, Pop Culture and Futurism, featuring selections from the Frederick R. Weissman Art Foundation through April 23rd, an exhibition of works by pop art icons like Andy Warhol, Roy Lichtenstein, James Rosenquist, and more, and Futurism Concepts and Imaginings through March 30th, featuring seven Italian artists who defined Futurism. More information is available at 561-392-2500 or at bocamuseum.org.
B. Soka's Overheard series explores diversity through one-person shows. On March 17th, Aiza Fatima discusses sex, religion, and politics from the perspective of six Pakistani-American Muslim women in Dirty Paki Lingerie. Details at bsoka.org.
Kids in Distress prevents and treats child abuse and neglect in the South Florida community. More than 11,000 families are served through programs like education, foster care, and family counseling. You can join in helping the community at kidinc.org.
This is the Florida Roundup on WLRN. I'm Tom Hudson. Thanks again for listening. Vice President Joe Biden was supposed to visit the Dominican Republic, but instead he was diverted this week to deal with troubles in Ukraine. Biden had been expected to push the DR government to address a controversial court ruling. Back in September, The DR High Court ruled the children of immigrants are not entitled to citizenship, even if they are born in the DR. And mixed in with all this diplomacy is religion, with the Catholic Church angry over the U.S. ambassador to the DR. Tim Padgett covers the hemisphere for WLRN. He is back here on the Florida Roundup. And Ezra Fieser, a freelance reporter based in Santo Domingo, DR, with us as well. Tim, first of all, tell us about this tension between the U.S. ambassador and the government in the DR, and the church, quite frankly.
Yeah, it's not so much a tension between the government and the new ambassador. It's tension really on the part of the cardinal, the Roman Catholic cardinal in the Dominican Republic, Nicolas Lopez, who is very fervently opposed to homosexual and gay and lesbian rights. And James Brewster, the new ambassador, well, not new. He was appointed over the summer, but he's one of the first openly gay ambassadors. Mm-hmm. And this has caused a lot of consternation on the church's part in the Dominican Republic. And they simply, because they have so much influence there, it's also caused problems for the government then in dealing with the U.S. and this new ambassador.
Ezra, in Santo Domingo with us here on the Florida Roundup, this tension was likely to be really exposed between the U.S. ambassador and the Catholic Church, but also trying to circulate and push against this Dominican Republic High Court ruling against citizenship for immigrant children this week with the vice president's visit. It didn't happen. The tension likely continues. What are the expectations for what the U.S. may be able to do here?
Well, I think the U.S. has been fairly clear in that it disapproves of the ruling, and it's joined with several other foreign governments and regional bodies such as CARICOM in pushing the Dominican government to either walk back the ruling or make concessions for the people that are affected by it. The question I think that it raises with the U.S. presence here is how it can work through partners on the ground. You know, the interesting thing that I've found in covering the Catholic Church here is, and as Tim has written about this before, there's a real split between the people that are working on the ground and the Catholic hierarchy here. The cardinal, as Tim mentioned, is opposed to the ruling. He's opposed to homosexuality. He's come out publicly with some controversial statements against the ambassador. But if the U.S. is able to work through some of these partners, church partners on the ground that are actually pushing for the government to make changes to the ruling, then I think it can be successful in its push to make provisions for the people affected by the ruling. The problem that it has, though, is this lack of communication between the ambassador, who is new, he came last year, and the conservative cardinal, who is, pretty controversial even here within the ranks of the Catholic Church.
Yeah, and one of the problems here, too, is this is not just a gay issue with the cardinal. He also very strongly supports the court ruling. He's brought a lot of nationalist fervor into this whole dispute, as well as religious fervor.
But seemingly the U.S. and the church, have they been aligned in opposing this Dominican Republic ruling on the citizen status of immigrant children in the DR?
That's a big question, because I think what really bothers the cardinal more than anything else is the fact that U.S. Installed an openly gay ambassador. And I think that is really the linchpin of his opposition to all of this.
So, Ezra, how has James Brewster's appointment and early ambassadorial duties in Santo Domingo gone over with the government of which he is the U.S. connection to? Not the Catholic Church in the DR, but the actual Dominican Republic political power structure.
Right. I think what you've seen is that the government trying to make concessions for, Ambassador Brewster to have a stronger role or a more prominent role in relations. There was a recent pronouncement by the Dominican ambassador to the Vatican in which he defended the cardinal. And then you saw quickly the Ministry of Foreign Relations take back that statement and say that it was not the position of the government, it was his position independently. So I think that you've seen the government try to make connections and certainly been open to Ambassador Brewster because, as you mentioned, it is their connection to the U.S. and they're very dependent and very aligned with the U.S. government. The problem that I see is that the influence of the Catholic bishops here on politics in the political realm is so strong that it's difficult to separate the two.
But the other fascinating wrinkle here, though, Tom, is that we can talk about the Catholic hierarchy in the DR, but what about the Vatican? And that's where Nicolas Lopez really doesn't have as strong a ground as he used to. The new pope, Pope Francis, has made it clear that cardinals like Nicolas Lopez aren't really on the same page with him, not only when it comes to the immigrant ruling, but also when it comes to the tone that the church is now using when it comes to gays and lesbians.
The judgment of gays, as the Pope has put it.
Exactly. And I think that was underscored earlier this year when the Pope appointed the new cardinal in Haiti. Actually, not the new cardinal, the first cardinal that Haiti has ever had.
Right. The bishop in Haiti was appointed as one of the 19 cardinals,
new cardinals
to the Roman Catholic Church.
Now, Haiti and the Dominican Republic share the island of Hispaniola, which means that for decades, if not centuries, the Dominican cardinal has always held religious sway over the entire island. That's no longer the case. And the new cardinal in Haiti, Chibli Langlois, is younger, a little more modern thinking, and this is seen as sort of a subtle jab by the Vatican at Lopez, and really sort of represents a diminishment, and I think Ezra might agree with a diminishment of Lopez's stature there in Hispaniola.
Tim Padgett with WLRN, our America's editor. Ezra Fieser, freelance reporter based in Santo Domingo, Dominican Republic, along with us. I'm Tom Hudson. This is the Florida Roundup. It does, Ezra, really set this stage for a bit of a power struggle in terms of the Catholic Church on the entire island, split between the two countries of Haiti and the DR. The message from the Vatican by appointing the Haitian bishop as one of the new members of the cardinals of the Roman Catholic Church really kind of fulfills the Pope's continued focus on poverty and on low-income areas in the world, certainly including Haiti. How does this change the dynamic for the church on the island?
Yeah, I think it's true. I mean, I think it is a jab at what the leadership of the church here, and certainly at Cardinal Lopez himself. And you know, there's a striking difference from what I've seen from the Bishop of Lacai, the new cardinal in Haiti, and the cardinal here in their styles. Even you see a real in the case of the Haiti cardinal, you see a very down to earth, very kind of reminiscent of Pope Francis. Francis himself, and the striking difference between the leadership style of Cardinal Lopez. Mm. What is interesting, I think, is, you know, Cardinal Lopez is now 77 years old. He's 2 years beyond the retirement age for bishops, and whether will be, as we've seen, a push here in the Dominican Republic for the Vatican to call for his resignation, for his retirement, whether there will be that push now, and whether how that will influence the structure, the power structure here on the island.
New scrutiny, meantime, for the church in Puerto Rico. The Catholic Church defrocked six priests accused of sexual abuse in one town. They've done that since 2011. At least 11 others, it was reported this week, are under investigation by local prosecutors in Puerto Rico. U.S. investigators are also looking into sexual abuse allegations. Tim, the Catholic Church has obviously been subject to this really horrible stain, the scandal, for many years in the U.S. and elsewhere throughout the world. What about a history in Puerto Rico?
Well, in Latin America in general, with the exception of Mexico, I think Latin America in general has been really sort of relatively unplagued by this. Hmm. By this scourge. But what we're seeing, even in the Dominican Republic, I mean, going back to Cardinal Lopez in the Dominican Republic, he had insisted that this sort of thing could never happen in the DR, and he blamed the sexual abuse crisis in the United States on the fact that that the church in the United States was too lenient about letting gay priests come into our parishes. Now he's got his own sexual abuse problems involving priests in the DR to deal with. And Puerto Rico now, I think, shows us that Latin America really was not immune to this problem, because this is probably going to, as many accounts are showing, this is probably going to turn out to be a deeper crisis in Puerto Rico than we're even seeing right now.
Yeah, Ezra, and the reaction in Puerto Rico has been, you know, similar to what the reaction was when these first allegations came to surface in the United States. Lots of shock, lots of real sadness, of course, and horror about some of the stories here. But in the U.S., the Catholic population is about a quarter, one out of four. In Puerto Rico and other island nations in the Caribbean, it is a it's a significant majority Catholic population. So what could be, obviously, the reaction to the church, to the local church?
Yeah, it's very important. I think in Puerto Rico, the last statistics I saw, that was more than 70% of the population there is Catholic. And as Tim mentioned, I think, you know, I was talking to a colleague from Puerto Rico last week and 2 weeks ago in D.C., and I think that the expectation is that it is going to get worse before it gets better. And it poses a real challenge, I believe, for the Vatican, because this is the real first crisis, you know, that of this proportion that the Pope, the new Pope, has had to face. And if you remember last year, there was the Archbishop of San Juan himself was the center of a controversy when it was reported that he was asked to resign by the Vatican, partially because of accusations that he had protected priests who had committed sexual abuse. So I think it'll be interesting to see going forward how it worsens and what the Vatican's response to the situation will be.
Tim, this really is the first significant, perhaps global, test of the Vatican with the new pope.
Well, and particularly since this is the first Latin American pope.
Tim Padgett covers the Americas for us here at WLRN Miami Herald News. Ezra Fieser, freelance reporter in Santo Domingo, Dominican Republic. Thank you both for joining us here on the Florida Roundup. That is our program for this Friday afternoon. It will be back on the air tomorrow morning, 6 a.m., and of course, later on this afternoon, it will be on WLRN.org. Florida Roundup is produced by Elaine Shannon and Alicia Zuckerman. Our Public Insight Network analyst, Steph Farrow. Our executive producer for WLRN is Peter J. Mertz. Technical supervisor today is Michael Stock. South Florida Arts Beat is next, and you won't want to miss it with Ed. New Jive, live, Studio A, right here on your radio. It is going to be the hottest room in South Florida. I guarantee it. Stick around for South Florida Arts Beat next here on WLRN. Monday morning at 9 on the Sunshine Economy, it's wine and liquor on the Sunshine Economy. Monday morning at 9. I'm Tom Hudson. This is the Florida Roundup. Thanks for listening.
So much to look forward to, both coming up in just a couple of minutes and later on this week. It's certainly going to be a good week of programs for you here to listen to.
Gotta love wine and liquor on Monday. I'm sorry, can't let that hang in the air. That's awesome. I can't wait for that.
Yeah, absolutely. We're in the middle of our spring fun drive, and we're here just for a couple of moments to let you know. I'm Lorenzo Ponce de Leon, and I'm joined by Mia Lorenzo, that we need your help, and we are rounding up the rest of our Florida Roundup fans to get in and support this program and to support South Florida Arts Beat. You can't hear live shows like this anywhere else.
Guys, it's Tom. I think, what do we need? A couple of dozen more listeners here in the next 8 minutes or so.
My producer's telling me 27.
27 is what we need. We can do that here on WLRN. And I got to throw it out there, Mia, because you refer wine and liquor on Monday. Yes, we are going to talk about it on the Sunshine Economy. There's one winery in South Florida, makes technically fruit wine since it's not made from grapes. And
I've been there. Yeah, it's a great place.
And when we talk about liquor in South Florida, what do you think we're talking about specifically?
Moonshine?
Rum. And lots of it.
Of course. Rum. Bootleggers, right?
The largest family-owned spirits manufacturer in the world has its U.S. headquarters here in South Florida. And South Florida is responsible for more than 10% of all of its U.S. rum sales.
Really?
So of course,
think
about distributors here
Bacardi?
In Miami.
That's right.
Right.
Bacardi? Yeah, Bacardi. 10%, more than 10% of Bacardi's American rum sales come from Florida.
one state is responsible for a tenth of its business.
Yeah, we're happy people.
So it is big business, and we're going to imbibe perhaps a little bit early Monday morning.
Maybe yeah, there you go.
Not quite a hair of the dog necessarily, but we are trying to end early for this fund drive, and you can help us out here. We need just a handful, really, just about two dozen or so calls here before the 1 o'clock hour and before Ed Bell kicks off what is going to be, it's going to be the hottest room in South Florida.
Oh,
I said at the end of the program.
Definitely.
A live performance with Ed is always really exciting. And folks can help us out at 866-247-9576, WLRNradio.org.
I heard that they actually decorated the room, Mia tells me, because they're filming in television studios on the television side
that's
of
right.
WLRN. They
that's
have
right.
a set there? That's,
yeah,
that's what I hear.
Haven't put my eyes on it, but it was supposed to set to look like a...
Like
nightclub.
A TV set? Like a nightclub?
No, like a nightclub. Like a hip nightclub.
I'll tell you what, it's going to sound like a hip nightclub on the radio, no doubt. And it's part of that local programming, 2 hours of great local programming back-to-back on Fridays here on public radio in South Florida that you can't get anywhere else. And it's listener-supported public radio. It is the biggest chunk of change that we use to make this kind of programming possible is responsible for listeners during the midday here. And we can do it with your help. We need two dozen calls here in the next 4.5 minutes at 866-247-9576, efficiently, securely online, WLRNradio.org.
And we've done very well. We have done very well so far. We've got a lot of new members on board, which is excellent. A lot of existing members contributing. We'd like to thank Barbara in Miami, Roberta in West Palm Beach, and David in Pembroke Pines. We want to thank everybody for those of you who have contributed. But if not really, it just takes 2 minutes of your time. Go online to WLRNradio.org or call 866-247-9576. Get in on that. Oh, man, I'm going to redeem myself. Get in on that Apple gift card worth $2,500. You'd automatically be entered into a drawing or a drawing for 2 round-trip tickets to Chicago. And that includes 2 nights in a hotel to see a live taping of Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, which would really be awesome.
And I probably ought to offer up my travel agency services for that, considering that I lived in Chicago for 20 years. You may want to pack your snow shovel, if depending upon when you go. But local programming, guys, is really the heart and soul, obviously,
absolutely.
Of what we do here
absolutely.
At WLRN. Yep. Our great colleagues at NPR, our great colleagues with all the other organizations that we have. But what we really try to do at WLRN is bring the voices of South Florida to your radio. And coming up on Monday, it'll be the voices of winemaking and rum making.
Yeah.
The next Monday, by the way, we're not going to leave it there with libations. It's about craft beer.
Mm-hmm.
So for the next 2 weeks, you know, waking up for a sunshine economy on Monday morning, we're going to get your week started off right. Wine and liquor next Monday, and then beer the following Monday.
Absolutely. Now, here's something good about getting the takeaway from what our listeners have to say. And this is coming from David, who is a new member of WLRN, and he writes, WLRN provides me with an unbiased, unexaggerated, educational, and informative source. It's a pleasant experience that I truly look forward to each day. What can you take away from WLRN and the shows and the programs that we have to offer in tandem with our participation with NPR? What is that worth to you?
Fewer than two dozen left here, Lorenzo, at 866-247-9576. 23 callers or online visitors at WLRNradio.org. You know, we said this yesterday on the air, Mia, that creating tomorrow requires appreciating yesterday and understanding today. And to David's point, Lorenzo, I think that's what we try to do. That's the opportunity and the duty that we have at WLRN and with our colleagues at National Public Radio each and every day to bring that comprehension, that understanding, that grasp of the stories that shape our lives to the radio. And we do it with your help at 866-247-9576.
And we have a great staff here that gets out there and gets to the root of the story because being a person who works here, a staff person, it's because you have that passion and that drive to dig deep for the story, to get to the meat of the story. Like you had your stories on today and you look at every point of view, you leave nothing left unturned. Nowhere else can you get information like that but on